True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host, I'm Jen Coffendauffer. First of all, I am going to start off with a big apology. And that is, while I was able to change it on what we call StreamYard, which is the app that I use to create all of these streams, I was not able to change it on YouTube because it was a pending. I was not able to change what the show is going to be about. Yes, I do have a great show planned for Nancy Guthrie. I'm going to postpone it till tomorrow. I see all these great questions up here. I'm going to address those questions. Also, I put together a show that I think is important. I'm always trying to find information that's very relative and relevant to the actual investigative side of everything. And so I was really excited to talk about it, but I always believe, and I hope you all appreciate this, that it is so important, I think, to talk about what is passionately on one's mind. And I think that that is sort of being true to the channel and true to each of you. So I am really passionate about what just happened today. And for those who have been following it, and I want to give you plenty of time in case you decide, Jen, I really don't care about that case or don't want to hear about that. I understand. But I think it's really important that we talk about the recent verdict that just happened today, just a couple hours ago, and then the sentence that literally happened about 20 minutes before I was coming on regarding the Carmelo Anthony and Austin Metcalf case. For those of you who don't follow this case, it was a case where you can see on your number, or the gentleman in yellow, his name is Austin Metcalf. He played for a high school called Memorial High School in Frisco, Texas. Frisco, Texas is an absolutely beautiful community. It's just so green. It's very lush. It's very rich, hoity-toity. You know, the roads are lined with these mansions, because in Texas, you know, for $500,000 or so, you could get what would be $5 million in Connecticut or New York. It's just unbelievable the amount of house you get there. And so if you can imagine the roads just lined with these mansions, and then the people who have $1 million, $2 million, Carmelo Anthony is living in a gated community now that has about a million dollar home. And so anyway, my point to all of this is this is a beautiful suburban area where murders and crimes like this are extremely rare. In Frisco, the county is actually Collin County, Texas. And in that community, there's another high school called Centennial High School. Again, both wonderful high schools, both very nice. The demographics there, about 48-49% white. And then about 12-14%, depending on which particular demographics stats you look at, are Black, African American. And then in between there are the other races. And when we're talking about race, there are five separate races, right? There's white, there's Black, there is Pacific Islander, there is Native American, and there is Asian. So when I talk about race, that is all to say that, and thank you so much, Golden Hen. I really appreciate you appreciating why I really felt it necessary to talk about this. And I think you all know I'm a Texan girl. But for the main reason is true crime and what this means in our true crime community, what this means, this case, because I think this case is so important on a lot of levels. The trial began last week. A jury was selected, and I want to start right there. The jury that was selected, because there's a lot of false information going around, there's a lot of just crazy information going around. I've been trying to just literally unload on Twitter X, which is my main platform, to try to keep the truth and the facts out there. And then whenever I hear something that adjusts those, in other words, updates anything, I love to put those on too. It's such a big platform of a wealth of knowledge and some of the most wonderful people on X. Also, the most poisonous people are there. It's kind of strange when you can sit behind a keyboard. But I've always loved X because I found it a very intellectual community when you have sort of the right makeup of your community. It's really great. Nevertheless, there was a lot going out in the stratosphere of X. And I want to first talk about this jury. The jury that was selected did not have any African Americans on it. Why, you might ask? Well, first of all, we just spoke of the demographics, and I went through on X that there were 600 potential jurors chosen out of the community. So you have 600, right? That means if demographics held, that would mean about 72 that would be African-American. I actually saw somebody post, and I don't know how accurate it is, but that it was less than that, that was even in the 600. And again, that doesn't really surprise me because you're talking about a jury pool, who's available, who gets the notice, who's there, who's coming in, and people that call and don't have to come in for certain reasons, right? They're overseas, they're in the military, whatever it might be. But nevertheless, this jury pool was 600, and then they narrowed that down. And on the jury, there were Asian people. That's another race, right? There were Hispanics. Hispanics are considered part of the white race. There were Middle Eastern. And then my understanding is there was also somebody of Indian descent. I never understood whether that meant Indian like the Far East or Indian as a Native American. I am not sure about that. But that was the makeup. There were minorities as well as white people. So white, it was very mixed. I think it was 5 to 7, as I recall, in the voting jury, right? Because the total amount chosen were 18, which is, again, mathematically only 3% of 600. So as you start to narrow down of 600 people, how many of those were Black? If again, it was 72. I heard it was less, but I don't know how accurate that information was that were in the initial people. My understanding, and this I believe to be very true, is that there were 3 African Americans that sort of made the cut, if you will, and were up for consideration. They had pared it down, and they were part of that pare down to be either as the sitting jurors or as the 6 alternates. Now, this is what happened. My understanding is, and I believe this, as I said, to be accurate reporting, is that those 3 were cut by the prosecution because they were educators. In other words, related to the school systems in Collin County. And when that happens, that can obviously be problematic because you might know somebody who, you know, you might have been a teacher, an educator, somebody who came across either Austin or came across Carmelo. And that could be positive or negative for either side, right? You have a negative interaction that could skew you one way or the other. And so for just cause, that was why they were stricken. It had nothing to do with race, 0 to do with race. And I have to tell you the reason that I really felt this passion in my heart, and I know we've talked about this a lot. Crime should be race-free. In other words, I don't care what color you are. If you commit a crime, you need to be held accountable. In other words, justice is colorblind. Politics regarding crime should be bipartisan. I'm not saying they are. I'm not trying to be naive. I'm saying they should be. And so for the purposes of, I guess, as I discuss crime, I think of it that way. Justice is colorblind and crime is apolitical. And that's how I like to discuss it. Because, and this goes way back to when I was an agent. And when I was an agent, obviously I'm Hispanic, I'm American Indian. That's, you know, you can look at me and kind of tell. And I'm a woman. That's very obvious. And so there were all of these different groups, right? Every month, I swear, it was African American month, and then it was Native American month, and then it was, you know, Woman Month. There were all these different months, and then also all these different societies, right? The badge group, the WIFLs, women in law enforcement, the Asian group. It was so crazy to me, and I want to say this is why. And this has just always been my point when it comes to these things. If we can't start thinking of each other as just people and looking at people as people, we're never going to be viewed as people. And that's why I used to say as an agent, you know, just stack me up, rack and stack me. You don't need to carry my luggage. You don't need to open the door for me. You don't need to make any sorts of accommodations for me because I'm slighter than you and a woman. I want to be held to the exact same standard. And same with race. Don't give me any, you know, special things because, you know, special accommodations or anything because I'm clearly Hispanic or because, for those of who really know me, I'm Native American, meaning my great-grandmother on my mother's side was 100% Apache. And I tell you, if you go to that part of the world, that's not something that you want to say necessarily, right? Not that I wouldn't say, but I'm strictly saying something you wouldn't want to say because there's still exists prejudice. And I understand that. I want to share with you a story. When I first became an agent, and so remember, I was an FBI agent 25 years starting in 1990. But prior to that, for about 2.5-3 years, I got my experience as with the Office of Inspector General. I worked in Kansas City and in Dallas. I was a federal agent, 1811, the same series as an FBI agent, same type of investigations, but I had the USDA laws. I've seen people make fun of that, which I don't mind. They are some of the most important laws I've ever investigated and helped with. For instance, laying out in a field in the middle of the night, watching these despicable cattle thieves take dead cattle who died of cancer eye, pick them up and transport them to a slaughterhouse that wasn't supposed to be operating, cut them up and put them in the school lunch program. Cancer eye cattle that had died not of natural or had died of infection, not were slaughtered. In other words, you're not supposed to have anything that's not healthy and then you slaughter them. Why do I bring all of this up? I just bring this up to say that I think it is really important in these types of cases that we are absolutely colorblind. And when I was working for the Department of Agriculture, doing cases like that and many others, food stamp fraud, but not what you think, food stamp fraud. I literally went into communities with food stamps, got money, and then brought crack cocaine from behind storefronts. So a lot of people don't really understand everything that the Inspector General offices do. But anyway, that's another show. I could get into that. But when it comes to something that happened. And we were in Wyoming, around Thermopolis, Wyoming. And I was training a young agent because I was a more senior agent. I'd been around 2.5, 3 years. And then it was a Black female. Her name was Elaine. And we are up at, and we're starving. And there's not that many places around Thermopolis where we were. We were kind of in the boonies, a lot of buffalo. And anyway, I said, hey, let's find, and I still do this no matter where I go, let's find a great cafe. That's, you know, home cooking, something you can't get anywhere else. That's what I'm always looking for. Forget the chains. Take me to something I can only get wherever I'm at, right? And she was very hesitant. She's like, I don't know about all of that. You know, I just don't know. And so I talked her into it, right? I'm the senior agent. I'm like, no, you won't regret this. It's going to be great. We walk into this small, and the year, in case you guys are wondering, probably right around 1989. And so we walk into this cafe, and I didn't see another Black African American in there. I'm very hard to tell, even though I'm very dark skinned. If you meet me in person, nobody really knows what I am. They just assume I'm sort of a mix of a lot of things. But nevertheless, we walk in and we go to sit down. Waitress comes over. And she gives me a menu. And she doesn't give Elaine a menu. Now, Elaine just put her head down. She goes, let's just leave. Let's just leave. This is 1989. And I said, oh no, we're not leaving, Elaine. And then I asked the waitress, I say, where's her menu? We're not serving her here. What do you mean you're not serving her here? We're not serving her here. And I came from a community that just wasn't like that. It wasn't how I was raised. It wasn't what I saw generally. When I say generally, it just wasn't what I saw. I had never seen somebody refuse to be served like that. It was really upsetting. She was so upset. So I said, all right, Elaine, we'll leave. I got up. I made a bit of a scene. You know how racist you all are to allow that to happen in your community. I put 5 cents on the table because here's my 5 cents, and which was a colloquialism for like, here's my thoughts on this. And we left and we went through like a drive-through, and she was so upset. I'll never forget how upset she was. And then I realized, because she didn't tell me, why she didn't want to go to a small cafe like that, because she knew she'd probably be discriminated against. So with that being said, I understand that, and that was, 30, 40 years ago. I understand that that probably could take place in other places currently, and that things like that happen. I could share another story with you about me personally because of me being Hispanic, but I'm not going to go on this racial thing. What it just ticks me off is that people are using this case. Some people are using this case with a dead 17-year-old. A dead 17-year-old who was stabbed so viciously in the chest that the sternum, think about this. So for those of you who know anatomy, you can feel right there, feel your sternum. Your sternum is literally one of the hardest bones in the body. I would argue the femur is the hardest, but the sternum is so hard. It's made hard because it has to protect your heart and your lungs, you know, your very vital organs. And while seated, this young man with his whole life ahead of him, to the chagrin, I'm quite sure, of his family, this is his mother, took a lot of brutal force and used a 3.5 inch blade. Again, I'm trying to dispel a lot of rumors that are out there. It was 3.5 inch blade. It wasn't 5 inches. It wasn't seven. It wasn't some K-bar knife. Let's call it for what it is. A pocket knife, 3.5 inches, which is still pretty large. It was opened and he stabbed brutally, stabbed Austin Metcalf, another 17-year-old, in the chest. Now, why? Why did he do it? We had heard leading up to this case that it was a self-defense case, right? That somehow he was being beaten. That's how I think of it. If you are not beaten within a, you know, where you think you cannot survive it, if you are not up against that sort of force, you cannot use lethal force unless you are facing lethal force. There were, I believe, right around, correct me if I'm wrong, Chad, 24 student and or otherwise witnesses that testified that he was asked, Carmella was asked to leave approximately 10 times. I've heard up to 15 times. And he was underneath somebody else's tent. Look, this is my thing on that. There was testimony by a coach. Actually, she was more of official, that said, listen, these tents are like locker rooms. And you don't go in other people's tents. That's what she testified to, kind of lay the land about these locker rooms. These tents. They're sporting tents. They basically, do I have that picture? I have a picture of one, but I've showed it before. I don't have it here. But they're just like those big tents you set up at baseball games, for those of you who watch sports, soccer events. And they're large, pretty large. And people go underneath there. They put their personal items underneath there. It's a safe place. They have water. You know, you can bench your stuff like a locker room, that you can trust that nobody's going to steal anything, something like that, right? So that was the situation here. And he went into a tent that was not his team's tent. Now, I want to make this very clear. His team, Centennial High School, did not have a tent. He was underneath Memorial's tent. So Centennial did not have a tent. But those players or at track athletes went to their buses. They had other places where they could store their personal items, blah, blah, blah. There was a witness who knew Carmelo. And this part got a little gray about how really close they were. But basically, it was a friend's friend. So they knew each other and had purportedly invited Carmelo to the tent. Come on underneath here. And I have to say, although I do understand this sort of privacy, you've got an opponent underneath there. Been to so many track meets in my life. That was my best sport, not the sport I chose to play in college, but it was definitely my best sport. And you know what? It is shocking. You know, I don't know why he was asked to leave. I know that people didn't appreciate him being under there, probably because he's an opponent. I know there was bad language used by Carmelo, if we're to believe the witnesses. There was a lot of testimony how he was asked to leave, and he belligerently basically said, I'm not leaving. This all took place, by the way, at sort of a neutral school or a neutral, sorry, track area for the area to compete against. So there were a lot of teams there. And what happened was rain set in. And I've explained this before that at any track meet, rain does not never stop a track meet. Lightning will postpone it, but rain won't because the track absorbs it. They don't cancel these meets. These meets are so large, especially when you're talking about Texas, and they're very well organized and all these teams, there's money been paid to watch, and it's important that they can compete so that they can get qualifying times for regionals and to determine, you know, all sorts of other things down the road. So they don't cancel them. It's not like a baseball game. It's more like football. You're not going to cancel football unless there's lightning strikes in the area. And then typically, again, you postpone. What is my point of all this? My point is that he was underneath this tent, which in a sense, I'm just trying to explain why he was there. He was asked to leave. He didn't leave. And by many accounts, Austin Metcalf gave him a shove, a push. That's how it was described. There was no beating up. There was no fight. In fact, the testimony is he didn't want to fight him, meaning Austin Metcalf, and somebody else did testify that he had at some point said, "I want to kick your arse." That Austin Metcalf had said that. One witness said that. Remember, there's like 24 witnesses, all these different accounts coming in. And then other people testified he didn't want to fight him. So that was for the jury to decide. And obviously the jury made their call and the jury decided that indeed a push was not commensurate with somebody taking out a knife and so forcefully plunging it into the chest to kill another. And certainly he was of an age that he would understand that if you plunge a 3.5-inch knife into somebody, into their chest, through their sternum, everybody, through this hard, hard plate, you can all feel it right now on your own chest, 2 to 2.5 inches deep, according to the medical examiner, into the heart, into the ventricle, and slash that open. And remember what the ME said? This was a 2 to 2.5 inch gaping hole. I'm not trying to be, you know, too graphic here. I'm just describing this. Think of that. 2 to 2.5 inches, right? 2 to 2.5 inches. That's enough to sort of put your fist through as you're striking. And I wonder how much of Carmelo's hand and fist went through that gaping hole he created with that knife. I explain this because it's super important to understand this wasn't this was forceful. Then he runs, drops the knife. He's consoled by a coach tells him, you know, basically, if Austin Metcalf dies, your life is changing forever. That's what this coach that ends up kind of having this intersection with him tells him. And then Carmelo says, he's not going to die. He's not going to die. And then the coach is like, well, if he does die, your life is going to forever change. And do I truly think that Carmelo Anthony felt terrible about what he did for many reasons? Remember, I should say too, he immediately said he did it. He said, I did it. And then he made a comment at some point before the official interview began and said it was self-defense before the interview. Those are sort of the facts that I'm just concisely telling you what the jury heard. Another misconception is that he was 5'6", 135 pounds. No, you can see him on the chart here. He was a very nice sized young man, He was an athlete, captain of his football team, captain of the track team. I want to give him his accolades where they're due. Austin was about 2 inches taller than him and probably around 40 pounds heavier than him, for what that's worth. It just goes to show you, it doesn't matter how big you are if you have a knife that plunges into your chest. You know, it doesn't matter how big and strong and vital and athletic you are. No amount of muscle, no bone structure can stop a sharp like a knife going in your chest. So again, here's how he stands up to the board, around 6 foot. So anyway, but I wanted to also dispel some other things. So this was right at sentencing. I was watching the sentencing live, hoping that they got the sentencing out before I came out. And again, a jury within about 3+ hours found him guilty. Some people might think, well, that's not enough time. But there really wasn't that much evidence. The video was grainy. Even the close-up version was grainier. It was from far away. You know, 24 different things that, again, you're listening to people's testimony. You know, you have the autopsy. But there just wasn't that much testimony. There wasn't that much to review. Some people estimated it'd be over in an hour. I really thought that 3 hours, 4 hours, what my prediction was certainly, but I said by COB, 5 o'clock, they would have a verdict, and they did. And that made a lot of sense to me because I know many of you watched it very close, but if you watched it very closely, you saw every day I recounted what the general testimony was. I played a lot of reporters that did a great job making graphics. And so, you know, I put that all up. Again, the only video, by the way, was down below, from down below. It's shocking, right? Especially if you thought that this was going to turn into some sort of fight, which to me also told me people just weren't paying attention. They never thought this would be that big of a deal. You know, hey, leave the tip, blah, blah, blah. There was nothing. It wasn't like a bunch of pushing and shoving and, oh, great, I'm going to grab my phone out and videotape this like you normally see. We didn't have videotape except one that was down clear on the field, you know. So for that reason, it was very far away. And they tried to hone in on it. They tried to close up zoom. And when they did, it just got grainier. So you can't really make out exactly what happened, but you could certainly see people fleeing. You could see Carmelo fleeing. You could certainly see images and things. You just can't see the up-close version of all of that. But I wanted to show this because this was right at sentencing. And, you know, people are making, will there be riots? Will there, you know, what's going to happen because of all of this? You know, blah, blah, blah. And this is all there was there. And I could show you a lot of different shots, but this was the main, you know, display, if you will, of people. I think this is one of these cases where the media has made it out really a bit worse in terms of the uproar. Now, we'll see. It's possible that Dallas, you know, they could burn Dallas down, or Philly or LA. You know, they're always looking for an excuse. When I say they, I mean people who want to cause civil unrest, Antifa type folks. You know, they always love to find an excuse. So I can't say anything. You know, I'm not going to say nothing will happen, but I can just tell you up here in Frisco, and it's really, I want to describe that this is like a suburb. It's a suburb. It's basically house upon house upon strip mall upon strip mall, golf courses, tennis, recreation. It's beautiful. I mean, the Cowboys, you know, a lot of Cowboys, Dak Prescott lives there. A lot of very, very rich, wealthy people live there. It is well above the Texas norm. So, you know, this just is not the climate for some sort of big, you know, crazy, you know, rioting type situation. You are just not going to see that. You're just not going to see that here. Now, could it entice some other areas, some other cities? Perhaps. But you're not going to see that in Frisco. And certainly that wasn't the climate I saw. But I want to play for you this quick video right after the verdict, not after the sentence. Again, I'll go over the sentence. And just to let you know, the 3.5-inch blade is not legally prohibited. You can take that to a school, 3.5-inch blade. It's 5.5 above, you cannot. But it's against school policies. So there was no way he should have had that there at this track meet. No way. If it would have been found, it would have been confiscated and likely he would have been suspended. All right. So, but I want to play a reaction. This was the Carmelo Anthony's spokesperson, the family spokesperson from the very beginning. Although, watch what he says in terms of who he represents this time. This is him in the parking lot, ginning up everyone.
To be able to make sure that nobody said...
Sorry, let me go back.
I speak on behalf of myself, Minister Dominique Alexander. I speak on behalf of myself as president of the Next Generation Action Network.
So you see, he didn't say he spoke on behalf of the family. I've showed a lot of clips early on where he spoke on behalf of the family. The family was right beside him. The mother was right beside him. They had asked him to be their spokesman. But then watch as he goes on.
The Next Generation Action Network wanted to respect this process, to be able to make sure that nobody said that the Next Generation Action Network instructed this.
So he's saying Next Generation Action Network. That's the name of his... whatever, that's the name of his, what he represents. And you, and the reason I'm head shaking and things is the issue is that this is a guy convicted of hurting a little child. He was convicted. He actually somehow, even though, and this always tells you how people don't even care about children, beat a child, hurt this child. And then he got probation, and then he screwed up his probation by getting in trouble. So he had to serve 2 years for that. 2 years for injury to a child was the exact charge. And again, that's a plea. He's lucky that case didn't go to jury, and he knew he couldn't have it go to jury. So I don't have a lot of respect for this individual. And I was sickened to see that the family of Carmelo would hire this individual, would have him be part of their entourage, at least early on. It's a little unclear to me here if they sort of separated that. But anyway, here we go.
Process. Interfered in this process.
I forgot to tell you. I'm sorry to interrupt, and then I'll let it go. He came on before this, before there was a verdict, and said, listen, we're going to respect the process. And it was such a setup because I think he absolutely knew what was happening, right? He absolutely knew that most likely this was going to be a guilty verdict because we all, including him and any advisors he might have had, would have seen that evidence, okay?
But what this process did is shown that Black lives do not matter in Collin County. It showed us that time and time in American history, it has shown us to remove emotions from yet the law. This trial showed that it put emotions over the law. After Trayvon Martin and so many countless names, It has shown us that black life is not safe in Collin County. It showed us that they did not listen to the law. It showed clearly that a judge interfered in this process. It showed very clearly that a black boy was allowed, not one black soul on a jury. An all white jury convicted him in 2 to 3 hours. We know that they did not prove their case. They are currently sentencing Carmelo Anthony, but we know that the Next Generation Action Network put the first $10,000 towards an appellate attorney. And we will fight Collin County like hell.
I respected
this process. I allowed and called for peace in this process. But Black America should be very upset about what went on today.
We are.
Now, before all of the internet lawyers and before all of the interpretation of the situation, I'm only an advocacy leader. I'm not an attorney. I can only help families be able to navigate these processes when they find themselves in this type of situation.
Well, yeah, absolutely. From the beginning, that's what his purpose is to make this about race and stir it up. And remember, the other thing that he did was he blamed the school district. I don't know if you remember that. I played that on another clip on an earlier show about this case. He actually said it was their fault for not canceling the track meet when there was rain. Why do you think he did that? He absolutely did that to set up a lawsuit. Mark my words, they're going to sue the district. They're going to sue the city. They're going to sue the county. They're going to sue anyone with deep pockets to literally blame them for this decision. And I'm telling you, he set it up. He keeps setting it up. And, you know, this is just trying to set up some sort of Al Sharpton, some sort of name for himself. And it's really despicable. It's really despicable. Let me see what Golden Hen has to say. I love that name. Doesn't the defense approve the jury that was selected? I'm sure that was what happens to me all the time is my correction comes in all the time, probably because you don't use jury, but you've used cherry more recently. Yes, both sides approve. Both sides approve. You know, at the end of the day, that's what happens. And because this was a multicultural and multiracial jury, I don't think they're going to be able to have any standing for the appeal. But we'll see. We'll see if they can somehow prove that the, you know, race was involved. That is not the reasons that they discussed. It was about them being educators. I saw a lot of other information, but I can't confirm that. So I'm not even going with some of the other things I heard. Let me play this man and then we'll talk about it.
Black man and a defendant.
Yeah. This is an amazing preacher. And I tell you, I hope y'all follow him. I'm definitely following him now. He doesn't do a lot. I had never heard of him. And he came up in my feed. And I tell you, I really promoted him. And I did some of this. I did not realize he didn't say his name at the beginning. So I was remiss in some cases. But take a listen to what this gentleman has to say.
Good morning, everyone. Sunday morning Tat Talk with Jamal. And let me start this off. Just because I am a black man and a defendant in a crime is black, it is not my responsibility to defend him simply because he's black. For the last past few days, some of you have been writing, how can you turn on another fellow black man? That mentality is why the black community is in shambles like it is. You believe because the defendant is black Black folk responsibility is to defend the criminal. No, my job as a black man is to make sure if the criminal, black, white, Latino, Asian, his whatever, tell the truth. And if he's wrong, he's wrong. And I will not be pushing false narratives and lies to justify because he black. Carmelo Anthony, his so-called friend, who he was there under the tent to see, said, "We won't cool like that, black people." If you are out here defending Carmelo Anthony and saying what he did was self-defense, then people are going to look at us and going to say we're lying. And the next time a young black man is faced with something like this, and he really was being harassed and someone really attacked him, and he may not have a knife, he may just pick up a weapon, whatever's close to him, to defend himself, you know what they're going to say? Oh, this is just another Carmelo Anthony. And that young black man going to be locked up, or worse. He's going to be picking up his book bag to leave the situation, and somebody's going to say, oh, he's reaching for a weapon. And they shoot him. Black folk, you got to think. This crap we teaching our children is not productive. It's not good. We're teaching our children to be victims or inmates.
I mean, he's just so good. Because, I mean, as I think it was Dr. Milley said, he could lead anybody. He would lead me. I don't care what you could tell. He doesn't care about race. He cares about justice. He cares about justice. So I just felt in my heart that I had to do a show on this. I know you were all waiting for the Nancy Guthrie. I promise we'll do it tomorrow. I'm traveling again tomorrow. I'm going to be in sunny Ohio tomorrow. Traveling again. So I probably will be around this time again. So it's weird because I love to do the morning report, but I'm so glad to see all of you here. But anyway, my heart really told me I needed to come on, dismiss some of the myths about everything. Again, the death penalty was never on the table. Why? There's a Supreme Court case that says anybody who's a juvenile that commits murder cannot receive a death penalty. So that was not on the table. And then also, he wasn't even charged with capital murder. He was charged with murder. And I know I called it murder one. I was trying to say there's different degrees in Texas. So just like, you know, first degree, second degree, third degree, they don't use the words degree, but they are degreed, right? Capitals at the top. The first degree of actual murder is then below that. Then you have manslaughter, and then you have involuntary homicide, involuntary manslaughter, right? Manslaughter is when it's intentional but reckless, and involuntary is just literally you're driving down the road, it's super dark, and a kid darts out in front of you, completely involuntary. So Texas has these different degrees. I just wanted to let everybody know the death penalty was never on the case for this. And in fact, it was up to 99 years. And there was also something I just have to tell you really quick. There's a passion part of Texas law that if basically something happened like this in with passion at the last minute, that you actually could mitigate the crime you were sentenced of. So in other words, it could go down to say a manslaughter if the jury considered this passion. The jury said no, this wasn't a crime of passion, if you will, that he thought about it. I guess because reached into the bag, grabbed the knife was open, and he made all those comments back and forth. No, I'm not leaving. No, I'm not leaving. No, I'm not leaving. So they decided passion would not be a part of their sentencing. He got 35 years, everyone. quite frankly, and I need to look and follow up because this might have been said after, but that should mean in 17.5 years, he would be eligible for parole. And I understand people might be saying 17.5 years, oh my gosh, he's 19 years old. He's going to have to serve 17.5 because up until this time, he's been on house arrest, right? And so, yes, I understand. He's not getting out till he's 36. Did I do my math right? I get that. Austin Metcalf is never going to breathe another breath, eat another hamburger, run another sprint, throw another javelin, be a part of a football team. He doesn't get to have any of that. And his family is never going to get to watch him grow up, to go to his college football games, to watch him have a child, to watch him get married. Nothing. It's done. So I don't know if you all believe that this sentence was right, whether you think it's too small, but the jury gave him 35 years again. He could get parole after 17.5. That's Texas law. So I'm pretty sure that that's what is going to be in place. 17.5, half your sentence, even if it's murder, 17.5, you can be considered for parole. Yes, I love that by Just Jennifer. It's the difference between permanent versus temporary. All right, everyone, that's our show for tonight. I appreciate you understanding that we didn't talk about Nancy. We will tomorrow, I promise you. This was just really burning passionately in me. And I really thank y'all for being here. Thank you to the mods who are so amazing. Thank you again for being here at 9 o'clock. All right, everyone, until next time, may justice be served.